Hello and welcome to the live stream live. It is November the 26th, 2024, and I hope everybody's doing so well. We're very, very close to Thanksgiving. I hope everyone is gonna eat until they explode, but in a positive way. I don't want anybody feeling bad about eating too many pieces of pie. It's always positive to eat pie. This evening's show mug is a Shakespeare Insults mug. It matches my shirt, which is kind of a play on a Banksy. Actually, it's not kind of a play on a Banksy. It's exactly a play on a Banksy, but it's him hurling a skull, and I think it's pretty cool because I'm a big Shakespeare nerd. As usual, the live stream live is sponsored by nobody. Not yet. Hopefully soon we'll get a sponsor. I will put your logo right here, and we will say some fun stuff about you, and that would be great. Let's see what's been going on with me. So this week I had a couple of performances at the Metropolitan Opera for an opera called Tosca, which was a lot of fun. I had two commercial auditions. I have one that I need to do over the holiday break for a procedural episodic. And I got my availability checked just about an hour ago for a thing that's really cool. And if it becomes a thing, then I will let you know what it is, because it'll be really cool. Like I said, so I recently watched two really cool films. I watched Lee, which is the Kate Winslet film, where she's playing the photographer, the journalism photographer in World War II. It was incredible. It was a really interesting and engaging film. Just being the only woman to be a wartime photographer and also to take her pictures of the Holocaust and the concentration camps and all of that stuff, feels now more than ever extremely poignant and real, just because of everything that's happening in the world. And just a pretty stark reminder of what could potentially happen depending on what's happening and who's in power. So it was very well done. And then to not have it be about war and about crazy sadness, me and my wife watched Saturday Night, which is the movie about the creation of Saturday Night Live, which was a lot of fun, actually. I didn't know what to expect. It was extremely frenetic, which is exactly how I guess I imagined and how I've heard the backstage life of that show actually is. And it was also, I guess, kind of refreshing or maybe horrible to see that the executive world hasn't changed at all. But it was a very cool film, and I highly recommend that you see it. I don't know if it's out anymore, but I watched it on a award screener, so I don't think it's out anymore. But when you can watch it, and watch Lee. Lee is out now, and it's very, very cool. If you have any questions or concerns, I will, concerns, but if you have any, I will also address them. But if you have any questions or comments, pop them in the chat. We are live on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. So I'll be able to answer and talk throughout the show. Yeah, so we have a very cool person on today. Her name is MJ Webb. She is an audiobook narrator. I happen to know her because we worked together on a few things. She's extremely talented and wonderfully kind and just a all-around beautiful person. And I'm really excited for you to meet her. So without further ado, here is MJ Webb. Oh, hi.
Hi.
How's it going, MJ?
Oh, it's a bit dark. Here in the Midwest, it gets real dark real soon once the time changes. So
yeah, when is it dark there? Like 3?
4:30-ish.
Okay. Well, it's the same here, but I imagine it's more dark.
It's pretty intense. Oh, we're north of the 45th parallel.
I see.
So we're far closer to the North Pole than the equator. So
it's yeah, chill. So I imagine it just becomes totally black.
It's not quite that bad. Okay. Daylight hours are very short. I've heard anecdotally from different practicing physicians I know that most people who live in the state of Michigan have a lower vitamin D level than they should.
That makes sense.
supplementing probably the whole like northern half of the country could probably use a little vitamin D.
Are you Upper Peninsula?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're a Youper?
Yes.
And everyone else is a troll, right?
Well, yeah, I guess technically I'm a troll as well because I wasn't born up here. I've lived here basically my entire adult life, but I wasn't born here. So depending on who you ask, I'm a troll still.
Can you explain that?
So Youper is sort of just a fun way to say someone from the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And what connects the two peninsulas of Michigan, I'm going to do a hand map.
Over here, we have. Yeah.
So I'm trying to do it, orient it correctly with the screen. No, this way. There we go. The Mackinac Bridge connects the upper and lower peninsulas of Michigan. So if you live below the bridge, you're a troll.
Oh, I see. Oh, I get it. So is it a playful thing or is it like an actual like, people don't like each other from the north and the south?
Oh, it's certainly more of a playful thing. There's a bit of a rivalry between people from the UP and a little bit of like Wisconsin. And then there's when you're quite far south, there's a little bit of beef with Ohio. But generally, Michigan
that Ohio is
the best umbrella of fairly nice, but nobody likes Ohio, right? It's good thing that's come out of Ohio. I'll wait.
Dave Chappelle live there now?
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Or that's where he's been for a while now. But that's where the Paul brothers are from, and they suck. So
yeah.
Who else is Stipe Miocic, who's the UFC heavyweight champion for a while. He's from Ohio. But that's really all I know. If anyone in chat knows any cool people from Ohio, I'm sure they exist. I'm just being silly. But if you know anyone that's like really
people
cool.
Are watching right now from Ohio, feeling really insulted.
They are. They just unfollowed me and they want me to have massive diarrhea now. But it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, no, so I live up in the Upper Peninsula. It's pretty rural up here, even, you know, the more major areas, Sault Ste. Marie, Marquette, Houghton, Hancock area, they're still quite small.
Okay. So MJ actually kind of pulled me into the world of audiobook narrating. During the lockdown for horrible COVID, I was going crazy and I built an audio booth because I was trying to like be creative. And I was like, let's see if I can do some audiobooks. So I did some and I didn't know how to really do them yet, but I put up some like audio samples and I got hired to do this like werewolf romance book. And you found me on ACX like looking for a partner to like narrate with.
Yeah, so the weird thing about, you know, freelance narrating, I don't work with an agent, so I don't really know how to appropriately network with people, but I desperately needed a male narrator to duet narrate an audiobook with me. So I just went on ACX and started listening to samples and absolutely like cold messaged a bunch of people. I think I messaged like 5 different people over the course of like 3 or 4 days, which felt very awkward and uncomfortable for me. And I was actually really, really glad when you responded. And There's just kind of like an immediate ease of the way that we work together.
I mean,
nice. We communicate well, and our voices worked well together on the projects that we've done. So
it's true.
All thumbs up on my end.
Yeah, I mean, you are. Do you have an acting background? Do you come from the theater or anything like that? No.
Yeah, I did community theater a bit. Growing.
Yeah, your acting ability through your voice and the way that you play your characters in your books and the way that you also just do the narration is extremely wonderful and very dynamic. It feels like a trained actor's performing them, which is rare because it can feel really, really flat sometimes.
You know, I think part of it is that I was a big audiobook reader long before I ever started narrating. So I knew narrators that I liked and ones that I didn't. And I had a good understanding of why I did and didn't care for their performances. But I mean, I guess in some form or another, I've been performing for a long time in a lot of different areas. You know, I sang with my father in church. I did community theater. Sang in a few different choirs, played various instruments in different musical ensembles. So kind of just got a little bit of a taste for performing in general. Mm. And then just kind of learning to take feedback and maybe kind of pick and choose which area is worth investing in. Where do I see myself making improvement? Where am I enjoying the process of growing?
So how did you start? You just were like, I'm gonna do it one day. Like, how did you get into it?
Wow. So when this is like one of those, I almost didn't have a chance to do anything at all with my voice, and I swore I would if I got the chance again. So when I was just newly postpartum after having my oldest, my son, I developed Graves' disease, which is a fairly treatable thyroid disease. It's autoimmune in nature, but they typically treat it just by treating you with radioactive iodine, kind of melts the thyroid. They give you supplemental thyroid hormone for the rest of your life. You're good to go. But I had been breastfeeding and I just had a baby. So using the radioactive iodine wouldn't have been safe or effective. And so we were running down all these other options. There were, you know, meds I could take in the meantime while I waited to be done breastfeeding. There's the surgical option to have it removed, but that came with a big risk of damage to my vocal cords. And I thought, I love performing. I love singing. I love acting. I love talking. So I thought, man, what if the worst case scenario were to happen? And I've spent all of this time not really making anything of something that I find so much joy in.
Well, that would have been horrible.
Out that I was able to I had to stand, you know, a few different meds in the meantime while finished up with breastfeeding and was able to get a nice safe radiation treatment. Sad when that's the safer option, but that's life sometimes. So that worked out, and I thought, man, this is my chance. So I literally Googled how to become an audiobook narrator. And I started reading, and I didn't stop reading until I had listed a few auditions and sample pieces on ACX. And within 24 hours, I booked a 5-book series.
That's incredible.
It's been a whirlwind ever since.
Yeah. I mean, you have a back catalog of so many books. And
just about an entire year off. I took a little sabbatical between bed rest with Logan, and then I relocated and had a bunch of life shifts in the middle there. So I think I only put out one or two books in 2022.
Right. Yeah. You're like superhuman. Like, I know that like a lot of moms are, and especially if, I mean, you also were, it was just you and the two boys for a period of time, and you were still making shit happen, which is
yeah,
wild.
I took a teaching position full-time, teaching pre-K, which was amazing. But it got to the point where I wanted to kind of recommit myself to narrating. Once I got out of an apartment, I was able to purchase my home and set up a studio space. I was like, man, this is, I do love teaching, but I love narrating more. And balancing all of those hats, you have to make sacrifices somewhere. So I ended up leaving the center I was teaching at and going back to narrating full time as of this summer.
And that's awesome.
Busy bee.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So the return kind of brought a shift. I'm doing more poetry again. And I started doing some younger adult books.
Cool.
Some early chapter books, which kind of brings a new age range for characters, and it allows a lot more play for those sort of dramatic, quirky side characters that you can have a bit more fun with the voice. So that's been really cool to do lately.
That is cool. You started off though in like spicy romance novels, right?
Full on spicy. Yeah.
Yeah. Spicy spice.
Spicy.
Yeah. That's where I came in, was Spice Town.
And I still do those. So obviously I do kind of separate my spicy titles go under MJ Webb, and my more family friendly titles go under Martha Webb. That way, hopefully there's a little less algorithm.
People don't like, you don't have like a teenage kid like hearing your mouth pornos.
That's my worst fear. I feel like I probably could have done a bit more to get more creative with a pen name to sort of separate those two facets, but it's a bit late now and I'm just gonna hope for the best.
Just hope for the best. Yeah, I mean, I've, and you have too, like narrated, like there's a spectrum of spicy for sure, like in the romance universe. And I will say that like there aren't any more like romances of old where it's innuendo and shit anymore. Now it's just all like pretty graphic. It's just how far on the spectrum is it?
Yeah, I like the sort of the online book community and their spice ratings with a certain number of the chili pepper emojis. That's been really fun. But it it's hard to even find within the romance genre things that do sort of fade to black anymore.
Yeah.
That's just been a huge, huge shift in the genre.
Yeah, because there's no more imagination, right? Like it's like it's here it is very, very clearly, and exactly we're gonna
happening. Yeah.
When did you see that shift? Maybe like 50 Shades of Grey, maybe?
You know, I think it's hard to say. I noticed a lot of it because I've always been a big reader. I noticed a big shift in YA fiction when I was in my teen years, so early 2000s. I saw a bigger shift toward, and even the better selling authors. I mean, Jodi Picoult's 15 Minutes. There's a pretty graphic scene of intimacy, and it's age appropriate in the story. But you see around that time, I started seeing a shift toward more descriptive, even in young adult. Sarah Dessen was very, very popular at the time as well. And certainly I wouldn't consider it on the same scale of what I do for people like Ivy Nelson, for example. White spicy. The romance was age appropriate, but it was more of a story center as far as new titles coming out. I did notice a big shift around that time, just so the people who were still reading really wanted to be involved in these love stories, and they were becoming more and more popular. So as those readers aged, they still wanted
one of those, yeah.
In that new age range, which opened a lot of doors. And I think indie publishing had a lot to do with it, too.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Because there's no one there to be like, we have to keep this PG so that it can be in the bookstore or whatever, exactly. Right?
You look at most romance fiction is written by women. I don't have stats on this. This is, you know, just my anecdotal observations. There are some incredibly talented men and non-binary authors also in that community, but the vast majority of published authors, indie or traditional, are women.
Every
side of the romance. Yeah.
Everyone that I've ever worked on has been a woman. So that makes a lot of sense.
And so when you have, you know, it's kind of, I always say, like, it's the best market to kind of be in where I'm in this phase of life, because we've got, you know, women writing stories for other women, in a way that's not being as hampered by what is, you know, socially palatable through, you know, big five publishing. Well, now you can write what you want and get it out there. And if you've got the social media typically backing, your books are going to get in front of enough eyeballs that if you're worth your salt as a writer, you're gonna find some support there.
Yeah, it was interesting for me as a man to work on these. Some of them were not that great, but the ones that were really well done, it was very interesting to see romance written from, like, outside of the male gaze, because, like, what women actually want is very specifically different to what a man believes that they do from what I read in these books, and like how the male characters are portrayed. Mm-hmm. Even if they're like super tough guys that like murder people, they're extremely emotionally available, like so open about their emotions and having like conversations and just being in the same mental arena with women, which is how, you know, that's how I am in my actual life, but it's not how a lot of men are in general. And it's not how what the archetypal male is portrayed as in most media.
Oh, certainly. And I think that's part of the shift that I think women are able to conceptualize already. And I'm speaking very generally, you know, here. There are obviously the exception to every camp. We've got, you know, kind of going on here, but to reel myself back in a bit.
Okay.
Talking about, sorry, I went like three steps ahead of my head. But talking about, you know, the ideal hero in a romance book and how that looks different in contemporary romance, because you have predominantly women writing for the female gaze, there's a big shift from the classic, you know, men are the protectors and providers in our society attitude. And I think there is almost like an Arthurian romantic longing for some of that you see play out, but almost an expansion. Women are looking for being emotionally and psychologically protected and provided for. So it's, in my mind, sort of an evolution of the traditional perception of what it is to be a good male partner, to be that, you know, what makes a man a man, I think is shifting in the eyes of at least romance readers.
Well, I love this genre, and when I first came into it, I wasn't really sure, right? So at the time, when I first came in, I was very skeptical, and I was like, "Oh, romance, like, I don't know. Like, I know that that's where my like voice fits and all that stuff, and I'll likely start there first because there's so much of it." But as I worked in it, and as I worked with people like you, and with authors like Victoria Lark, for example, I put good romance in the same arena as really good horror films or like really, really good comic books. It's the specific art form for a really, really specific and wonderful purpose, right? Like, it's not just happening because it's happening. It's happening for a reason. It's very specifically there, and it has a very specific message. Did a big loud noise just start happening from my end?
I heard a little bit of some kind of whirring.
All right. I think I forgot to turn off my dehumidifier. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Shall I start tap dancing? That's not a genuine offer. I will not be tap dancing. Sorry, everyone.
Huzzah! but yeah, so that's kind of like how I see it now. Whereas before, I was like, oh, it's this thing that's not... So in my mind, I was like, oh, this is not art. This is trash, right? But it's not, because... I mean,
there's been a big shift in that understanding, especially with the rise of, you know, we talked about 50 Shades of Grey was very popular. The Crossfire series became very popular. And then most recently, A Court of Thorn and Roses. So you had all of these people putting their eyes on this subgenre or this genre of literature that they're not used to taking a close look at.
Yeah.
So I think that's an understanding that's becoming more common, but I think it'll be a long ways off before the general perception of, you know, romance books are viewed the way that I, and it sounds like you do as well, view them.
Yeah, I mean, because like you read like Game of Thrones, right? And it's, there's a lot of that worked into those books too. Like there are tons of spicy scenes, spicy romance, but it's in this crazy high fantasy world. So it's more acceptable. Or if it's like in science fiction or anything like that, it's more acceptable. But if it's labeled as this is just not just, but this is what this is, then yeah, then it gets like a more of a bad rap, I guess.
I suppose, but it's not exactly novel to dismiss the notion of, you know, the value of romance and of love stories in daily life. That's been, you know, just the way of humans for so long. I don't see that really ever changing, but
I think it's highly important. Yeah.
It swings, history swings back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, being able to like speak about, read and honor love in all of its forms and all of its pains and realities, and also like spectacular serendipity is important. It's important for humanity to have, I think too. So yeah, all right.
Thank you. So that's how we met.
That's how we met. Yeah, and that's how we became friends. And
we start with these prompts, and then we just get really heavy with it every time, you and I.
Yeah, I mean, we had a cool creative process. I don't know if everyone has the creative process that we had, but we would have like a meeting where we would work through all of the characters that we were either like that we both had to share, because typically how it worked was we got like alternating chapters, or like every two it would change, but we'd be playing the two like romantic leads of the book, and then we would overlap in each other's chapters, obviously. And then we'd have to work out kind of how to sort of sound like each other, even though we have totally different vocal ranges.
Yeah, I think is one of the greatest challenges in doing dual narration, where each narrator has their character's point of view chapters entirely, versus doing duet narration, where each character is voiced by a different actor and then it's, you know, edited all together. But doing dual, the way that we did it, where we're each reading chapters, you'd have some side characters that were very important, and making sure that they're quickly and easily identifiable to the ear when bouncing back between chapters became really, really important. So just being able to have those meetings, I felt like such a dork the first time we worked together. Like, listen, I've never worked with anybody, but here's how I want this to go.
No.
Let's read the book and then talk everything out in case we mess anything up. And it worked.
No, it does work. And that's how you, and like when you're working on a script, that's how you break down a script. So it made a lot of sense to me. And that's what it becomes. It becomes your acting script, mm-hmm. which is, and with a book. So it blew my mind. Like, I was terrified of it, dude, like for the first few books, because I was like, how am I going to play women? How am I going to play children? How am I going to play, you know, 50 different people, make them all different and unique? Maybe not like with everyone has their own like crazy voice, but just giving their essence enough of a variation to make it interesting and like fun and crazy dynamic. It was scary. It was more scary than what I do normally. And it was really cool to do it with you because you made me feel extremely comfortable, and like it was just like normal and you just do this stuff. So
I think it helps that given that I don't have really any kind of formal training in my background, I don't know the right way to say or explain like what I think of as placement, like where the sound is vibrating to come out of your head. And I know we talked about this on several characters where yeah. it was, okay, well, if I talk out of the left side of my mouth for this character, and then I talk out of the right side of my mouth for that character, even though I'm holding the same jaw tension and, you know, that sort of same chest resonance and the same pitch, but just switching where I was thinking of it coming from out of my face really made it sound like two different characters. And through our process, I was able to communicate that with you. And I think that played out in the final result of the books that we were able to produce together. So,
well, yeah, because it really helped, because just where the sound was, where it was chambering from, right, is you're able to get an idea of who the person is just because of where the resonance lives in the character. So when, whether I was doing the voice or you were doing the voice, because it came from the same area of the body, it was recognizable, which is cool, which is so cool.
Yeah. I think that's one of the really fun, like, acting elements that comes out in, you know, audiobook narration, is that say we're doing a henchman character and he's described as being kind of weaselly, but he has a low voice. Well, when I do, you know, a lower pitch, I end up with a lot more chest resonance just naturally. But a weaselly man is not going to resonate from his chest.
Yeah, so I'm going to be nasally, yeah.
I've got to keep that pitch and then shift it up there, and to be able to match that with another person was a huge challenge for me. But it was so exciting because it was challenging in a way that just really lit my brain up, and I couldn't get enough. I was so excited to start doing dual projects. I haven't done one in a long time, and that's one of the things I've been looking forward to. Getting back to doing narrating full time is to get back into those multi voice actor projects.
Yeah, they're cool. I mean, I haven't done, and my last audiobook was with you. So, I mean, like the world opened up again, and then my whole acting life just reopened again. And I'm not against them. I think they're awesome. It's just time-wise for me, it's a bit harder because I'm doing like TV, film, stage, and but it did open up like a bunch of other voiceover stuff for me. So I'm doing like animation and like audio commercials. And when we're not on strike, I'll be able to do video games again, which is really cool. But it all stems from this work, which I'll happily do again. It was so much fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, we touched on that. I wear a lot of hats, you know, I homestead, I'm a mom. I, you know, was when I was teaching and trying to run this and this and that and all the things, but you wear a lot of hats too, my dude.
I know.
I don't know that you give yourself quite enough credit.
I don't.
You are working in so many directions, and just in your work life. And I know that you have these beautiful, fulfilling relationships in your personal life with your family and your friends, and just like seeing you out there, like living on all fronts is so invigorating to see.
Oh, thanks, MJ. That's nice of you to say. I really appreciate that. But no, I don't give myself any credit at all. I never have. Thank you. I just want to keep going, you know, like I want to do fun stuff and keep moving. And that is an issue that I have, is like, I have to force myself to stop and look back and appreciate things. And that's sort of what this is, right? Like this live thing now is like, I love to talk to people. I love to meet people. And most of the people that I know are incredible. And a lot of them don't get highlighted in the way that they should. And you're one of those people that are incredible, but you don't get like I do. I've got like 20,000 Instagram followers now, right? Like, so, and I'm on TV and I get a lot of attention, but like.
Hassled a lot for my lack of social media presence. I technically have like all the socials. I think I have a website. I've forgotten the URL and how to get in and do anything with it. I'm the kind of person, I really just want to hide in my basement, in my little house on the side of a mountain, and just do what I love doing. This, the whole interacting with people part of it is so difficult for me. Like, sit down, small group conversations just light me up, but the notion of, I don't know, posting on Instagram feels like standing in front of the world in my underpants, and I've never been able to shake that feeling.
It was one of the hardest things I ever had to learn how to do.
Strap my government name on it. I'll let anybody hear me say those words, but post a selfie and,
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the hardest things I ever had to learn how to do, because I didn't want to do it either. I just wanted to just like leave it alone and just like post like a meme every once in a while. And then I was just like, let me just post everything. but I don't post everything. Like I keep my personal life pretty contained to my life. I don't really ever post my kid. Like, it's a weird world out there with kids and the internet. Yeah, so I'm not interested in having anything, like, especially because I'm so public and she's three, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's, it, I mean, and that's kind of the point I'm getting to with my kids as well. I used to post more than I do now, but I've been trying to find other avenues for kind of sharing and updating with family who lives farther away. In avenues other than social media, just because it's a scary world out there, and the internet's forever. And who's to say that, I don't know, if I did some things when I was like single digits young, count on one hand young, that I would be mortified if existed at all on, you know, video or photo, let alone that the entire world has access to it. That's a level of privacy deprivation that I don't think we're yet able to fully comprehend, but
yeah,
we're beginning to.
I'm so happy that when I was in college, like there was like just Facebook happening, like just happening, like the beginnings of it. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, not even when I was a child, but all the way up till I was like 27 or however old I was a nuisance to myself. So, and it wouldn't have been good to have that documented. Like me being very, very hammered all the time isn't a thing that is conducive to, you know, PR.
No. But I think there's going to be a certain level of grace that is going to come along with the next generation or two and just saying, you know, it wasn't my choice to have this content produced. I was a child. I didn't know, or I was a teenager. This, you know, it wasn't my decision to share this, and now it exists and I'm applying for this job. But can you really, you know, at what point are people responsible for their childhood actions as adults. I mean, if it's harmless and more so embarrassing than dangerous things, certainly.
Sure. Sure. All right. So heading back to the topic of audio booking. So as a non-agented, independent, non-union audiobook narrator, how does the onset of AI voices affect you?
It's scary in a way that, you know, I'm out here on my own.
Yeah.
I would love to get to the point where I'm able to, you know, work with a union, with a guild, to try to have some of those protections. But for now, it is just me, another small fish. And I feel like it's almost a hotter competition when, for a lot of especially indie authors that I predominantly work with, they need to get this produced as inexpensively as they reasonably can.
Sure.
So that they can make profit off it. That's, you know, their livelihood as well. So not being part of a union, not being part of guilds, having, you know, less technical experience or technical training, I'm often put in a similar price point to a lot of these AI production options.
Oh, really?
It depends on the group that you're going with. But it feels a lot more like direct competition, and really infusing each of my recordings with that vitality that comes along with a human voice. In poetry especially, I focus so much on the breath and the way just breathing with the written word really impacts its performance. And I feel like that's been one area where I've kind of been grateful to have been offered the opportunity to do poetry. It wasn't something I ever set out to do. But now it's kind of this beautiful human cornerstone of my backlog of things that I've been a part of creating. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that an AI generated anything will ever be better than a human there. I do understand the indie monetary issues. I've been fucked over by them a few times, which is great. But like, but that just comes with it, right? Like when you're out on your own and you're trying to negotiate your own deals and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, some of the AI voices are very good, and I know that there are, yeah, they're very good, and it's a little scary actually that they've all been trained on people.
Mm-hmm.
Like the internet has just been like scraped like of like animation, and like tons of audiobooks have been just scraped and used to train these models. And even the unions are working with specific AI companies where you can create your own AI avatar voice, mm-hmm, based off of all of your own like audio samples. And then people can purchase your AI avatar voice at a rate that you find acceptable for you not actually like working. Like, and but that freaks me the fuck out still.
Yeah,
like
you're licensing your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're licensing your identity, a part, an ephemeral part of you. I don't know. That squicks me, man. I don't think that's ever something that I could be okay with personally being a part of. I understand that that's, you know, a more morally acceptable option.
Yeah.
I certainly see it as a huge improvement to just pillaging the internet and you know, pirating the voices for that. But you still have to have those original recordings to pull from.
Right.
So I see a few long-term pitfalls there.
So do I. Yeah,
You're
go
always
ahead.
those new recordings, unless you end up with, okay, these are the five audiobook voices to choose from because these are, the ones that we've to, and that's what get used forever, and we lose the nuance and variety of human voice and the intimacy of the way that that human is connecting with that piece of literature in that moment. I know there are certainly characters that I would play differently now than I did at the time, and I don't know that that would necessarily be for the best. I feel like we pull, as performers, we pull from ourselves bits and pieces that connect with the characters in the story that we are in that moment telling. And there's no way to quantify it. There's no way to train an AI to do that. You can't pull emotion out of AI because it doesn't have it. So I don't think that there's ever truly a way that you can remove a live human narrator from the audiobook process without shooting yourself in the foot in terms of the quality of the art produced.
Now, what I would like to do is train an AI to edit for you. That's fine.
I utilize a service called Positron to do my proofing for me, and they have a lot of other tools, but basically they utilize AI in a way that assists narrators and doesn't infringe on the human voice. It uses technology to support humans creating better art rather than to replace the humans in the art process.
Which is honestly what tech is supposed to be for. So, yeah, I love AI as long as it's used properly and not as people replacements. What the fuck are we supposed to do, MJ? Like,
Well, see,
these are our jobs.
I've joked a few times that if AI takes over, at least I've got the homestead.
Yeah, so you keep saying that. Like, do you have a farm? Like, do you have animals and stuff?
I've got birds for now. I'm looking at
Birds like chickens or like birds like.
ducks. We did some meat ducks. This was my first like summer season in the house, so I was, putting in gardens to grow a lot of crops to sort of support myself and my local community. We do eggs and meat birds, hoping to expand a little bit more into that next year. But yeah.
And do you do all of your own, like, do you like butcher everything yourself? Oh, cool. No, that's cool. I mean,
I don't. I'm a talker and I'm very scared of this topic because I will overshare because it's not an issue for me and I don't want to traumatize anybody else. But
no, I mean, I don't have the space where I live in New York. Like we my wife really wants to have chickens, and I'd love to have chickens, but we don't have the space to have chickens. I'm assuming you've got a large area.
well. Sure. for me, no. For you, yes. I've got a little over an acre, which is enough for what I'm doing right now. I'd love to expand into something a little bit bigger down the road, but I'm doing what I can with what I have, and it's working out pretty well for me, but
We don't have an acre, so I if we have we have a nice yard and stuff, but we certainly don't have an acre. Like I can look at my neighbor's house; it's right next to my house, right?
horrible.
So,
I drive through neighborhoods and the houses are so close for and the windows line up and I'm like, people live where other people can look directly into their houses and that blows my mind in a way that I think I could never do it. And in the same breath I understand people who are like, you there was a bear in my backyard, a black bear.
did you punch it?
No, I just waited for it to leave. It was already inside. But it with the same intensity that, there are people who could never do what I do, I could never do. what you do. And I think that's the beauty and variety of humanity, right? We each find where we fit. Once you find that spot, you just kind of dig your heels in and make a life. So
it's true. I mean, my homesteading, I guess, is I've recently got into making sourdough bread.
Which I've loved watching your sourdough journey. It has brought so much joy to me just to get to see that.
So I made rolls for the first time the other day because I'm making them for Thanksgiving, and they're awesome and I'm very happy with them. And I'm just going to keep branching out. Like, we've made pancakes and I'm going to make cookies soon because they look nice.
Bagels. I tried like 6 different sourdough discard bagel recipes and I found my personal favorite. I'll send it to you. Holy smokes. Okay. They disappear in a day every time I make them.
What's the, like, how long does it take? Does it take, like...
Well, it's hard, right? So not long.
Oh, so not long. Oh, yeah, because it's already fermented. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the things that I have to do when I hit 20,000 followers is I was asked to do, like, a, like, sourdough bread from, like, starter to end bake video. So I'll do that.
That will be so much fun. Yeah. I'm so excited for you to get to that benchmark so you can make that.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It's soon. I'm like 100 people away. So I'm gonna have to figure out what to do. I'll like wear like a stupid apron or something and just have a nice time making it. But it's an obsession, dude. Like it becomes such a, like, getting the crumb perfect every time. Oh.
My partner and I both really enjoy the sourdough of it. My kids, not so much. So they go for more of the discard recipes. But my oldest is quite neurospicy. So when it doesn't feel quite the same on the tongue or taste exactly like he's expecting, it can get a bit dicey. So it's not his favorite, but it, for the rest of us in the house, it's a go-to.
And it's also like basically free, which is great.
Oh, I grow so many vegetables from kitchen scraps. I can the most ridiculous things.
That's so cool.
And just really try to intensely pursue minimal waste. I'm not as crazy to think that I'll ever get to the point of zero waste, but any system you can close is a good step to take in my book. So
I agree. I mean, we try hard here. It's hard to do that here in New York, but we really do our best. Like, I put solar panels on our house. I just bought like biodegradable kitchen garbage bags, which suck, but yeah, and I know that it's not like the consumer isn't going to make like a huge difference in the world because it's the corporations, but
we set the standard that we hold ourselves to, and that influences the standard that we expect from the world around us. And sure, if a few generations think in the right way, we might see some shifts. Will they happen in time? Oh boy, I'm not wearing my tinfoil hat today, so ask me.
I can't tell, but yeah.
but you know, it's never a bad thing to do a good thing.
I agree. That's a great, that's a great quote.
If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. I mean, if, like, I think we talked a bit when we first started working together, about, just because I talk about everything, I overshare. I think we ended up on the topic of cloth diapers a few times, which I did with my oldest, and then I didn't do with my second child because I was working full time, and it just wasn't feasible. Would I have loved to have not had to use disposable diapers? Yeah, but it didn't fit my life. And I think that's an important thing to remember when looking at really any kind of big sweeping change. You know, we want the world to be a better place. It has to fit into your life. Otherwise, it won't be sustainable and you're not actually going to make a long-term difference that's going to give you that long-term reward. So find what fits for you. Maybe it's not chickens. Sorry.
it's okay.
But you know, maybe it's the solar power or the solar panels, or you know, maybe the garbage bags aren't the right thing for you.
Stop it, MJ. Stop.
But you know, well, everybody tries their best and finds ways to do their best. And I think as long as that attitude prevails over the, you know, comparison and, you know, outdoing one another in any arena.
And it's really applicable to everything, what you just said. So, yeah.
You look at any group, you know, there's good and bad in every group, and too many people are looking side to side to compare, no matter where you go.
I agree.
Just focus, keep your head down and focus on the good.
Hell yeah, man. I love that. I love it every time that you've said it. It's fantastic. It really is. I mean, and it's and for people that are concerned about, like, I can't do something, like I can't do audiobooks or like I can't get in to a thing because of X, Y, and Z, or I live here, or I do this. Like, when you place yourself into a box, you can't get out of that box. Like when it's a box of no's, right? Then there's no way that you'll be able to do anything. You gotta just be like a dude that a person that's like always like, yes, fuck yeah, yes, yeah.
Yeah, that makes me think of, I'm like that girl who quotes Oscar Wilde, but that quote where he wrote, "We are all our own devils, and we make this world our own hell." Like, don't be your own devil. Don't put yourself in the box.
Don't do that.
Don't put baby in the corner.
Don't do that. But that is literally exactly what everybody does, and I feel like we're taught to be that way.
Not as maliciously as it might seem, but yeah. Because when we understand something, it's safe. And when it's safe, we can get behind it. And when we can get behind it, it's more successful because there's a community supporting it. When you want to do something weird, like, hey, I'm going to go down to my basement and talk to myself in funny voices for 6 hours. Trust me, I can keep the lights on. Doing this, you know, that sounds sketchy and terrifying, but it's doable.
It is. I mean, I'm a professional actor. it's the same. It's the same idea. It's like, I'm gonna go do this thing that no one really knows how to do. So, like, let's go figure it out. Yeah. Yeah, so basically what we're saying is you can do anything you want as long as you are positive about it.
Well, I mean, don't get hung up on the fact that you suck when you start.
Because you're going to suck. Oh, my God, you're going to suck.
God, everybody sucks. Everybody starts somewhere. None of us walked well the first time. None of us said our names well the first time. None of us did algebra well the first time. Everybody sucks at the beginning. Just don't end at the beginning and you'll be fine.
It's true. My first book, I don't even know how I got hired for it. And then, like, I sort of did it. I didn't know how to edit it. I didn't know how to, like, make it the right levels for, like, audiobooking. And then they hired me for 2 more books afterwards. And I was like, you're hiring me again?
The first author that I worked for was an indie author, Jen Brown, and I didn't tell her that I'd never done an audiobook before. I was just like, I had the confidence of the ogre white man, let me tell you. It was full send. I got this. I did not got this, and she was an absolute saint, and it was baffling to me when she brought me back. She's like, no, yeah, I want you to finish the series. And I was like, girl, you sure?
Are you positive? Yeah.
I mean, going back now, it's. I mean, I was on a terrible microphone. I didn't know peanuts about anything.
I was so very, very fortunate that when you found me, I had done all of my failing. Like, I had fucked up, like 8 books, right? Like, in like my standards, like, when I don't know everything, it makes me very upset, even though I'm very clear on the fact that I shouldn't know everything and that I'm always learning. But like,
but, other people, not yourself.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But like, I remember I was trying to upload my first book to ACX, and it would be like, these files are not acceptable. They are bad and they sound incorrect, and we're not going to let you get paid. And then like, I was like, oh my God, like, what is a DB? What is a sound floor? What the fuck is this? Like, what do I have to do? And I mean, I worked it all out just like a mediocre white man would, but once you get it, like with like anything, it just becomes like second nature. You like set all of your levels in the beginning. And honestly, like the thing for me that has never left, the thing that I hate about audiobook narration is the editing afterwards. It is the
oddly satisfying.
Yeah, I know that you like it. I fucking hate it. Like, I'll be in the booth for like 12 hours straight and just doing all the I love doing all the acting stuff, but when I have to sit down and like be like, ugh, and just like copy pasting
day.
What? Sorry?
I can't do them on the same day.
Oh, I can't do them on the same day either, but yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'll do a shorter recording session, you know, 2 to 4 hours, take a lunch break, come back in the afternoon and edit that afternoon. No, there's two different like versions of my brain. One can act and one can edit. And
they're, yeah,
the same, they're not the same personality. I joke that I've got, you know, several of them.
I actually hired someone at the end of my stuff to do all the editing, and I made less money, but I was so much happier.
there are lots of narrators who do it that way. There's lots of people who just produce for a variety of voice actors, and that's cool. I legitimately love every part of the process. I never want to do anything else. This is the coolest gig I've ever had.
Well, that's awesome, and it's good because you're very good at it. Hey, it's over an hour. It's great.
Told you I like to talk.
I like to talk too. This is, in fact, a talk show on the internet. So it's fantastic. So if they pop your name into the internet, they would find your body of work on Amazon Audible mostly.
Amazon Audible, Apple iTunes, a lot of the work that I've done for indie authors is only available there, but a lot of the work that I've done through a small publishing company I work for called Butter Dragons Publishing, they're on a lot more platforms like Scribd and Libby and a lot of those services that a lot of libraries here in the US will utilize. Hoopla is another one. So yeah, just MJ Webb if you'd like it spicy, and Martha Webb if you don't. I do have socials, but I don't post much. but yeah, so that's me. That's what I do.
Cool. Well, MJ, thank you so much for being here. It's been awesome just having this cool, like, ranging, fun conversation with you, as it usually happens, which is always fun. And I really appreciate you being here, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Bye. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We went over an hour, and I'm not going to apologize because it was a lot of fun. None of you had any questions other than you think I am hot and that you like my content. So that's cool. if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe and turn on all of your notifications. I do have a subscription. It costs less than a literal iced coffee from Starbucks a month, and you'll get access to behind-the-scenes stuff, everything that I've ever made, other things moving forward in the future. And you also get a permanent 15% off discount to all of my merch. Which there are links to my subscription and my merch and everything else, either in the body of this body of this video or in the links in my profile. So I really appreciate you being here. Happy Thanksgiving, or you know, fun day or food day or whatever you want to call it. I'll see you next week with another cool guest, and I really appreciate you being here. So have a magical night, and I will see you again very soon.